Welcome to Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.
Q is about conversation.
If we're really concerned about ending poverty, we've got to be more concerned about creating justice.
Our cultural products as Christians need to both defy and resonate with the culture.
Now God's doing amazing things. His church is expanding. His church is growing.
It's not what's the purpose of my life. It's what is the purpose that's been assigned.
Stay curious. Think well. Advance good. This is Q.
Who will we be? Who will we have become? Will we have pursued real creativity, real rest, real intimacy, real wisdom and courage? That is the life I want. I want it for myself. I want it for my children. I want it for my children's children. But I need help choosing it.
Welcome to another edition of the Q Podcast. The topic we're talking about today on managing technology in our lives is critical. It's one of the most urgent things you could listen to. We're hoping to give you just a full view of what's happening with technology, how it's affecting our relationships, and I'm talking iPhones and screens and televisions, film, computers, all of it. How is it affecting our lives, our relationships, and how do we as followers of Jesus live in such a way that we demonstrate what it means to actually manage this well? How do we be faithful to our children, to our friends, our spouses, to ourselves? And how do we not let technology just run rampant in our lives? This is something I care deeply about. I know back in 2010, my book, The Next Christians, we really described this idea of managing technology. I talked to one of our Q presenters for many, many years, a guy named Kevin Kelly, one of the co-founders of Wired Magazine. And it was early on in the life of Q that I had started to realize how much technology was affecting so many things. We had one of our keynote presenters in 2009 in Austin, Shane Hipps, talk about that. The spirituality of the cell phone was the name of that talk. And even then, we had people check their cell phones when they came in the door. They had to check them just like you would check a coat. We had to check our cell phones before we could come in. And you could just see the anxiety happening all around the room when people didn't have that phone to clutch to look down on, when they weren't, you know, sure what to say to the person sitting next to them or the new stranger that they were meeting. And all of a sudden, we found ourselves feeling almost naked. Like, where is our phone? It's usually tethered to us. And so I think as you hear this talk today, you are going to be deeply encouraged to think about, what does this mean for your family? What does it mean for your life? And the person presenting is one of the favorites around Q. Andy Crouch, he gave probably, I think, one of our first Q talks, if not the first talk in 2007, talking about creating culture. He's written some amazing books like Culture Making, How Do We Recover Our Creative Calling? And then he wrote a bestseller called Strong and Weak, Embracing Life of Love, Risk, and True Flourishing. But Andy Crouch's latest book is called The TechWise Family, Everyday Steps for Putting Technology in Its Proper Place. I really think this is the most important topic we as Christians, as we think about how we're going to be countercultural in a world right now, how we're going to train our children and kids to think a little bit differently. This is the topic to listen to. So I'm not going to hold us up anymore. Let's jump in. Let's hear Andy Crouch, this 18-minute talk on how do we manage technology.
So we have to reckon with something that's happened in the span of a single lifetime, not my lifetime, but my parents' lifetime, about 70 years. And here's the way I'd put it. We have always had tools as human beings, but now we have devices. So tools, which human beings have always had, they're one of the human universals, cultural universals, are things that extend human capacities in some way. But they require a certain amount of skill, effort, attention, or commitment to get their benefits. Devices are the new thing. They give us, at least sometimes, everything that tools gave us, but without requiring skill, effort, or risk. So I could give you a couple examples. I could talk about cultivating the earth and how we started with the tools of, I don't know, shovels and spades, just very simple hand tools. Then we figured out how to make those into a plow and attach them to an animal with the additional strength an animal brings. Then you get a tractor, which is a machine tool, you could say, but it still requires a lot of skill to use, as I learned when I was nearly thrown off my grandfather's tractor, learning to drive it when I was 6 years old. But now we have GPS tractors. And I met a farmer who drives one of these, except drive is not quite the right word, because he takes his Kindle books with him, and the tractor just goes up and down the furrows of this massive multi-hectare farm while he gets to read all day as his tractor does the work. That's a kind of device. Let me give you another picture of this, though. Just came up this week. Suppose that you wanted to take all these beautiful ingredients, apple, kale, pineapple, lemon, baby spinach, and create a really tasty smoothie out of them. You could use some tools of knives and strainers and squeezers and so forth. Or you could buy this new thing. I guess it's called the Juicero. The Juicero pulverizes all those things ahead of time for you, puts them into this pack. It's like the Keurig of juices. And you just close this little door and push that button, and out comes a kind of slimy green sludge for which people apparently will pay a lot of money. And this is where technology wants to go. A single beautiful button that will cost you $700 and then $35 every other week for subscription to the little juice packs. How would I describe this? I describe it as the ultimate movement from tools to devices, but beyond that to what I'd call easy everywhere, which is the dream of the technological world. The device paradigm, you might say, says your life can be easy everywhere. It can just work. It's the foundation of Arthur C. Clarke's famous little aphorism, every sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. And magic is the idea that I could just push a button and get what I want. A world where to have what I want, I don't need skill, don't need effort, don't need attention, don't need risk, just a button. Now, what people sometimes say about technology is they say, well, technology isn't good or bad, it's just neutral. And I understand what we're trying to say when we say that, but I don't think it's right if you think of neutral as being like a car that's in neither drive nor reverse and is just waiting to go wherever you want. Technology wants to go somewhere. It has a drive toward easy everywhere. As a Christian, I don't think I want to say, actually, that things are neither good nor bad. I don't think there's anything neutral in all of creation, certainly not culture. It's meant to be very good. But of course we know that when we distort it and use it based on distorted pictures of God and distorted pictures of God's image bearers, it becomes not good. So the real question we ought to ask about this easy everywhere world of technology is, what is it very good for? And what is it not good for? So I have a couple ideas for you. I think technology, in the sense of easy everywhere access to a kind of effortless power, is very good for production. It's not so good for creation. It's a great way, once you've created something, to extend it. So I'm giving a talk right now that I created, and I'm being assisted in all kinds of ways by technology. But technology actually, that wasn't that much help in creating this talk. Another way to put this is technology is very useful at expressing human capacities, but it's not very good at all at forming human capacities. Because actually, technology did nothing to form me into the kind of person who would have something to offer you in these 18 minutes. Because I'm so easily distracted and infatuated with technology's promise of easy everywhere, I did a kind of rough conservative estimate. I would estimate that technology has robbed me, conservatively, of several thousand hours of real creation that I've spent instead in various forms of distraction. When I was supposed to be doing the slow, patient, creative work of making something, that's difficult work. Instead, I let easy everywhere give me a simulation of real life. One more thing I think it's good at. Very good for leisure. Not so good for rest. Rest for biblical people comes from this idea of Sabbath. And Sabbath is the rest on the other side of creative work. When you press the button on the Juicero, you've done so little. I mean, how could you celebrate what you've done and rest from that demanding activity of pushing that button? Like, there's nothing to celebrate, right? But if you had managed to garden all those things, by the way, there is no place on the planet where you can have an apple, a lemon, kale, spinach, and pineapple all in the same place. But if you could do that, and you worked the ground, and you harvested them, and then you split them open with a knife, and then, you know, mixed them together. That would be a Sabbath moment. You only get Sabbath if you have creative work. Otherwise, you just have leisure. There's another dimension to Sabbath that I think is even deeper and more challenging for us. Remember this Sabbath instruction and the unique way in which the commandment for Sabbath given to the people of Israel specifies this. On the seventh day, you shall not do any work. You, your son or your daughter, your male or female slave, your livestock, even your livestock can't work on the Sabbath, or the alien resident in your towns. True Sabbath, by definition, means rest for everyone in the economic system. But that cannot happen in our world of easy everywhere. For me to enjoy this technology, someone else has to work. You can think of it a little bit like if you watched Downton Abbey back when it was a good television series and became a kind of wacky television series and then ended. Remember, there was the upstairs of leisure, where a privileged group of people got to enjoy wonderful, beautiful things in great leisure. But there had to be a downstairs of a lot more people doing the work. There is a huge downstairs to our world of easy everywhere. And it is not easy downstairs. Downstairs, people are mining the raw materials and rare earth minerals needed for our devices. Downstairs, people right now are keeping the power grid on, the internet up. Downstairs, people are taking apart the devices that we've discarded, filtering the images we would never want to see in our social media stream. There is a huge amount of toil in the easy everywhere world, and because easy everywhere has to be on all the time, there is never a break, there is never rest for all, and so in the biblical sense, there is no Sabbath, because there is no biblical Sabbath for anyone if there is not Sabbath for everyone in the economic community. So there's no contradiction between the two following statements. We have more leisure than anyone else in history, and we have less Sabbath rest than anyone else in history. This has implications for all kinds of spaces. I think anywhere where you want to be creative and any environment you want to be formative, you need to really ask, is technology actually good for this? But I've been thinking for the past year about family, and so I want to spend the last half of this talk talking about how this affects family. And so think about this. Family is where our creative capacities are first recognized. Other people may never frame anything you've ever drawn or painted, but I bet your parents did. Or somebody in your family said, you are a creator. That was good. Family should be the place of deep Sabbath rest in our lives, in relationship with one another and with God. And it is undoubtedly the most formative context most of us will experience. What would happen if easy everywhere took over that environment? Well, it would make us productive at home, very productive, but not very creative. It would give us tons of leisure at home. There's a lot of Netflix to get through. Walking Dead, I've heard, is really good this season. But no real rest. And it would rob us of family's formative power. The power to form us into persons who have wisdom and courage, character, skill, and capacity for love. My wife and I should say I'm married to a scientist. She works with very high technology in her lab, but it's all tools. She knows that science is hard. Technology is easy. Science is hard. And we stumbled into a few commitments that really helped us. It took us a while to realize even what we're doing, but we realized that we made some commitments about space. We want to create more than we consume. And we want our kids to think that way. We're creators first, consumers second. So we decided we'd fill the places in our home where we spent the most time with things that were not devices. Things that rewarded creativity, energy, effort, skill, attention. So there's a grand piano on our first floor that we've spent the kids' college fund on, because any kid can go to college, but not many kids get to grow up with a grand piano, right? So a clear, good trade. Craft table with all kinds of painting supplies right in front of the window so you get good natural north-facing light. A fireplace, lots of books, a kitchen stocked with raw materials and cooking implements, not with juiceros. Because we want our space to be a place that rewards skill and that kids realize there's something to learn here about how to be a human being. We made decisions about time because we wanted Sabbath in our lives. So we decided that 1 hour a day, for us it's dinner time, one day a week, for us it's Sunday, and at least one week a year, many years it's 2 weeks, we would turn off every glowing rectangle and every visible device and just enjoy a rhythm of life that involves both productive work and device-free rest. And we decide fundamentally every time we bring something into our home, we're going to have to ask the formation question. Because we are here, and we want our kids to know this, to develop wisdom and courage. That's our goal. And we have to ask of every activity, every device, is this going to help us develop wisdom and courage? Because that's what we do together. That's what family is for. It kind of worked. We've got teenagers now. This is the only good picture I have because teenagers are so darn self-conscious, you can never get them to like just be happy and smiling. So here we are, happy and smiling. Timothy and Amy, 20 and 17 now, are so grateful we lived in this quite radical way that it sometimes was extremely painful vis-a-vis their friends and even other families and other parents. And we all look very happy in this picture. If you knew the cost of this picture, if you knew the tears that I have seen on the face of every person in this picture, the depression that has been suffered at different times by every person, the anxiety, the conflicts, the long protracted months or years long, in some ways, silence between different members, as well as the incredible intimacy, joy, and pride in one another that we can take at our best. This is a picture of my family. It's also a picture of a crucible. A very challenging environment in which I and three other people have been formed as a person. Anything really valuable in my life is the result to some extent of the way I've been formed by these three and by the extended family that I could show you pictures of and the family of origin in which I grew up. And when God wanted to act redemptively in history, God chose to work through a family. It did not require one bit of modern technology. There was no device, no easy everywhere in God's intervention. It was a family, first Abram and Sarah, that conflicted, fractious crucible of Israel. And then the church, the community that from the beginning has called one another brother and sister. Because even more than biological family, we in the church are meant to be present for one another in the intimate, formative ways. Difficult ways that is necessary for the formation of persons. So our family has had the great gift of being not just part of our little biological nuclear family, but being part of the real family, the family that every family takes its name from, the church. And that means that other people have become part of our family. I could tell you so many stories, but an especially formative one was our friendship with David and Angie Sachs and their kids. Picture of them from a few years ago. A very formative friendship. They became far more formative on October 31st, 2011, when David received a diagnosis of terminal cancer, stage 4 cancer. And the next 16 months were full, in one sense, of technology. Medical technology that at great cost gave David another year of life. And a Facebook group called The Inner Circle that ended up with over 1,000 people in it. In which we all pursued the real life available to us and to David and to Angie and their kids in the crucible of suffering. It was a formative year because terminal illness is a crash course in wisdom and courage and being a person. And I think David would say, I think Angie would say, I know we would say, maybe the best year of our lives. In the last weeks of David's life, which were 4 years ago today, 4 years ago in April, a few of us were privileged to gather around his bed. All the devices had been disconnected. All the messages had been sent. And all we had to do was sing and pray and wait. And if there's one thing technology is no good for, it's being present. And that is what we most need as human beings, is for others to be present to us at our birth, at our death, and in all the moments of vulnerability in between. I don't know that we fully realize how much our modern technology is rooted in the ancient dead end of alchemy, the pursuit of the philosopher's stone, the doomed quest never to be fulfilled, of finding a substance that if you had it, you could turn all metal to gold, easy wealth everywhere, and could have everlasting life, easy life everywhere, the button you could push to get the universe to do magic for you. It was a mirage. Never existed, never will. And in one sense, our modern technology, for all its real power and all its real good, is a mirage as well. Because easy everywhere will come to an end for each of us. It will come to an end even for our technological world. And when it comes to its end, who will we be? Who will we have become? Will we have pursued real creativity, real rest, real intimacy, real wisdom and courage? That is the life I want. I want it for myself. I want it for my children. I want it for my children's children. But I need help choosing it, which is why I've been given family. And in God's plan, you are my family. Let's help one another choose real life together. Thank you.
I'm sure Andy's talk has made you think, has made you reconsider, how are you thinking about technology? How's it really affecting you? How's it affecting your family? How's it affecting the richness of being embodied with the people around us? And so I want to encourage you to not only share this talk with other family members or friends, but in your church community. I think our churches are going to be the places where we're actually going to be able to solve some of this. Because if we can all be sharing the same viewpoint, understanding how technology is affecting us negatively, understand its proper place, and then as communities start to live together, make it more normal to put our phones down, to not have phones coming in to every single setting that we're in, to make it really the status quo again, to be embodied in real relationships with people and to forego technology sometimes, even when it seems more convenient, then that's going to be our opportunity to do that. So share this, pass along, and also go to qideas.org if you want to watch this talk and see some of the slides. Watch that at qideas.org. It's featured on our homepage this week, and you can share it from there as well. And together at Q, I just want to say this is a topic we're going to continue to press into. We think it's critical, not only for everybody, you know, in the older generations, but specifically the younger generations who are trying to sort through this and really don't know what life looks like outside of a technology tether. And so we're hoping that this can just be one contribution to that conversation as people make many more. And I would check out the TechWise Family book. It's a great book. It's an easy read. It's a shorter book than typical Andy Crouch books. It leverages some of the great data from Barna Research on what's happening with technology use. And so we'd encourage you to get that as well anywhere that books are sold. And I want to let you know that there's an incredible opportunity for you to act on the kind of ideas that you're hearing through this show. And so you just heard Andy Crouch talking about the need for us to manage technology, to think deeply about that. Well, we need to do that because we need to proactively be a part of helping heal divides in our communities. And sometimes technology is part of what divides us. And so in our culture today, when many of us are feeling the divide, we don't know what to do. And Q is creating an opportunity in many of the cities that you live in on October 26th to come together with other like-minded Christians who care about being a part of the solution, who care about healing our divided nation. That's the theme of the night. Q Commons is an amazing event that's taking place in over 150 locations simultaneously on one night. Over 25,000 believers come together, people that are, some are parts of churches, some are government employees, some are teachers in your community. Many are working as entrepreneurs, business leaders in their community. Many are just mothers and fathers who are concerned about where this culture is going and how we as Christians ought to be leading, how we ought to be a part of the solution. We can't just bury our head in the sand. We have to be the ones that look up, that understand the times, and that know what to do. And so go to qcommons.com and see if there's a location near you. I know we have them in this listening audience in Minneapolis. There's also one in Madison, Wisconsin. But wherever you're at, see if there's one near you. And if there's not, there's still an opportunity for your church to host. And so on that particular night, your church can host Q Commons. We deliver it via private simulcast. We stream this to you. You'll hear David Brooks, New York Times op-ed columnist, but most importantly, the author of a book called The Road to Character. He's going to talk about how virtue is essential for us as Americans to know how to lead better in our communities. We're also going to have Dr. Kara Powell talking about how to confront our technology addiction. We're going to better understand how technology is dividing us and how we can overcome that through human relationship and human contact. Third, propaganda. He's a spoken word artist, an amazing prophetic voice, talking about our complicated moment. Also on the private simulcast, I'll be giving a talk about why culture matters, how the gospel calls us to care about our cultures. We can't just walk away. We can't turn a blind eye. John Stonestreet, who offers Breakpoint Commentary, is also going to be giving a talk so we can better understand our times and know what to do. We're going to have a panel on current issues that are affecting Americans and the struggles that we all have. It's going to be a night dedicated to you as a Christian, being thoughtful, being curious, understanding, but more importantly, connecting with those around you who care about the Christian's role in renewing culture, in being a light in the midst of the darkness. And so please go to qcommons.com, find your city. If you can't find your city, host in your church. Push that button, host in your church, give us your information. Let us get in touch with you about how you can be the one that helps bring this conversation to your city at such an important moment. So I hope you have a great week. I hope you have a little more of a tech-free week, a little more of an intentional week of seeing how technologies sort of intertwine into your life and maybe being able to get a little bit of separation from it as you be present with the people that God's put in your life. So have a great week, and we'll look forward to our next episode together. This show is made possible in partnership with Faith Radio and Northwestern Media.
Thank you for listening to the Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thank you for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Q Ideas with Gabe Lyons.